Hello, this is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Travel Commons Podcast. This is Travel Commons Podcast number 131, recorded Sunday, July 30th, 2017. This is the podcast giving the voice of the traveler. It's more about the journey than the destination. Two topics on this edition of the Travel Commons Podcast: Twitter Concierge Customer Service and London Tube Stories. So coming to you again from the Travel Commons studios outside of Chicago, Illinois, ready to admit that I have a craft beer problem. On Tuesday, I'm in Atlanta Airport on the back end of a one-day up and back. I get to the airport a bit early because A, I wanted to get forward positioned for a 5 p.m. conference call, and B, afternoon travel times from north of Atlanta, where all of my clients have ever been, to the south of Atlanta, where the airport is inconveniently located, that travel time is just highly unpredictable. I've experienced everything from 40 minutes to an hour and a half. And so the conference call ends early, just as United posts a 15-minute flight delay. But rather than bitch tweeting, I pop open my Untappd app and see what beers have been checked in nearby. I see some local Atlanta beers showing up at a place called Chicken and Beer. Good name. So I find a signboard in Terminal T, and it turns out Chicken and Beer is in Terminal D, near Gate D5, almost at the end of the terminal. And like I said, I'm in Terminal T, the closest in terminal, four terminals away. I look at my watch. Now, according to United, I have an hour. I pop open the United app. The delayed inbound flight is due in at 6:35 p.m., and United is calling for a 7:05 departure. Look, there's no way in this age of completely full flights and completely full overhead bins that they're going to get this plane emptied and reloaded in 30 minutes. And since it's a day trip, I actually don't have to worry about carry-on, so it's an easy decision. I'm off to Chicken and Beer. I got to tell you, highly recommended place if you're connecting through Atlanta, especially if you're a little bit closer, say maybe in Terminal C, D, or E. I posted the last Travel Commons episode the day before we headed out to London for a week, the highlight of which was going to the Adele concert in Wembley Stadium that Wednesday night. That was my wife's Christmas and birthday present. It was the opening night of what was supposed to be a four-night finale to her world tour. I'm glad we caught one of the front-end shows. She canceled the last two due to vocal cord stress. Would have been, I got to tell you, unspeakably awful for us if we'd flown over and then had that canceled on us. As it was a great concert. She actually was in great voice, and Adele is just a phenomenal swearer. Just like, there was just an impressive F-bomb count. So then when I got back to the U.S., I've been sort of alternating between Richmond, Virginia and Atlanta. As I said in the last episode, of the two, I prefer Richmond. I'm able to walk around downtown, so there's no need for a rental car. And it's only a 20-minute ride to and from the airport versus what I just mentioned in Atlanta could be anywhere from 40 minutes to 90 minutes. And a guy I'm working with in Richmond turned me on to the Scott's Addition neighborhood with three microbreweries in about a five-block radius. So yes, as you already know, I do have a craft beer problem. So following up, this day trip to Atlanta for a meeting was the first time I've done that really in a long time. That is, trusted an airline just enough to fly in the day of an important meeting. As it was, I still baked in a large safety buffer. I took a 6:15 a.m. out of O'Hare that landed at Atlanta just after 9 a.m. local time. And this was for a 12:30 p.m. meeting. So instead, kind of as a way to lower my personal stress, as well as the amount of bitch tweeting I do, I'll typically fly out, say, the night before. or a couple of weeks ago when my wife booked a 5:30 p.m. Thursday night dinner, I actually flew back Wednesday night. Now, last year, I would have flown home Thursday afternoon, scheduling myself into O'Hare at, say, maybe 3:30 p.m. and then taking the L down into the city. Now, I just don't trust the airlines to do more than maybe an a.m. or a p.m. There's just not enough slack in the system. The planes are full, the crew schedules are optimized to the T, and so when something goofy happens, just the whole thing starts coming apart at the seams. Now, this kind of happened a few weeks ago flying back home out of Richmond. My colleague and I were sitting in the conference room after lunch, and his phone starts going off. Flight delay texts from American about his evening flight back to DFW. I check my United flight to O'Hare, and sure enough, I'm delayed too. I guess United just didn't get around to sending the texts. Not critical, though. It just meant, you know, I'd be dining in the airport rather than at home. So I get into the United app, and I hit the Where is my flight now a couple of times to find out that the delay is from Grand Rapids Airport, which is then cascading through Washington Dulles and then down to Richmond. So when the plane is scheduled for tight turnarounds, you know, there's just no way to catch up. So we end up checking every 20 minutes or so, hoping things get better. And actually, surprisingly, mine does. Suddenly, there's no delay. So what happened? Did Grand Rapids suddenly magically clear up? No. Instead, you know, looking back at the inbound plane again, it's now sitting on the ground in Dulles. They must have swapped some equipment, and suddenly now we're back on schedule. So we head over to Richmond, and just as I go through security, I get a delay text from United. The plane is in Dulles, like they had said before, but the crew isn't. Their inbound flight is delayed, which then, of course, pushes ours. I sit down at the Sam Adams bar in Richmond's Terminal 2. I ordered a beer. I get some food. I get the beer right away. 45 minutes, the waitress tells me that they've run out of food. So I end up eating dinner at home after all, just a little later than usual. I've said this before, but hotel room technology is very slow to change. I still see a lot of those old alarm clocks with the old sort of 30-pin iPhone connectors on the top of them. And if you think about it, the iPhone that introduced the smaller Lightning connector came out almost 5 years ago. It'll be actually, I think, 5 years next month or 5 years in September. You know, I think a good bit of this has to do with scale. I mean, you know, just upgrading the TVs in the almost 4,000 rooms at a place like Caesar's Palace in Vegas can be a multi-year project. You know, that being said, it's been a long time since I've seen a tube TV in a hotel room. I think that's a good thing. Seems that most everyone has made the switch to the wall-mounted flat screens. And I'm actually even seeing more of the second generation, more kind of the smart TVs from Samsung and LG. And I've been noticing they've got this, you know, built-in Netflix and Hulu apps. And they say, well, you know, you can log in to your account here on the TV and access your own cues and, you know, watch things just like you're at home. Now, I tend not to take them up on that offer, though. I'm still a bit hesitant to scatter around too much of my personal digital stuff. I don't know how easy it's going to be to erase my personal account information off of those smart TV apps. Also, it's not just Netflix that I want to watch. I mean, sometimes I want to watch, say, James Corden's newest Carpool Karaoke on YouTube, maybe that my daughter has told me about, or I want to watch the start, like this summer, I want to watch the start of a Tour de France stage on NBCSN, which almost no hotel cable package carries. So, luckily for me, all of these newer flat screens offer pretty easy access to an HDMI port, which is kind of the, I don't know, call it the digital successor to the older analog VGA connectors that were on all the all the laptops. So what happened was, as I went out and as I noticed this, I popped over to Amazon, put down like $5, picked up a display port to HDMI cable, and so now I sort of regularly plug my ThinkPad into my hotel room flat screen through this DisplayPort HDMI cable, and so now I'm able pretty much just to watch whatever I want. It's great. I just wish, you know, these hotels would now upgrade their Wi-Fi speeds. I mentioned on the close of the last episode that I was pretty excited about taking an American Airlines 787, the new Dreamliner, from London to O'Hare. So back home from this Adele trip. As I got on it, though, I was less than stunned. I mean, everything looked pretty much the same. Maybe a little bit of a higher ceiling, but the interior felt like the interior of the newer 737s. Just double it because you got two aisles. So I don't know, nothing really different. I was going to be really jazzed about it. I came away with kind of a meh sort of idea, except for the window shades. So instead of pulling down the window shades, there's a button that sort of darkens the window, grays it up. And that was very cool, especially when they darken the cabin, after the meal service, when they turn the lights down in the cabin so that everybody could watch, TV or movie or whatever they were going to watch or get some sleep. Being able to look and still see the clouds and see the outside through a darkened gray window, that was kind of cool. But other than that, it's just another flying metal tube. And hey, if you have any thoughts, questions, a story, a comment, travel tip, the voice of the traveler, send them along. The email address, as always, comments, comments at travelcommons.com. You can always use your smartphone to record and send in an audio comment. Send a Twitter message to M. Peacock. Post your thoughts on the Travel Commons Facebook page or on the website at travelcommons.com. So the first topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is Twitter concierge customer service. One of the standards on my top 10 travel tips list, which I usually write, say, once a year as part of my annual prayers to the Google gods for more website traffic. One of those tips is to use Twitter as sort of, a concierge service into a travel company's customer service organization. I've used Twitter to ping airlines on the status of planes when the gate agents were in the dark. A few weeks back, I tweeted to Lyft asking why the price estimation piece of their app didn't work. The answer was, well, we kind of turned it off in Richmond for, some reason it was working. I couldn't quite figure out exactly what the reason was. But this time, Twitter saved me a bit of a hassle, really, last week with Hertz. Now, I've gone hot and cold on Hertz throughout my travel career. At the start, way back in 1985, when I was working for IBM and regularly flying into San Jose Airport, I liked them. But that was when San Jose Airport was kind of an old-style California airport. There were no jetways, just a walkway under a metal canopy to where the planes were parked on the tarmac. There were no rental counters, just a parking lot at the end of one of the terminals with a little Hertz hut in the middle, kind of staffed by a nice woman who'd give you your keys. After a couple of trips, we got to know each other, and she'd always give me one of the nicer cars on the lot. Now, fast forward 15 years to my low point with Hertz, which was at Detroit Metro Airport. I was there every week for about a year and never got a clean car or one with under 24,000 miles. I'm kind of back on a Hertz upswing now, though, that they're doing this sort of national car rental-like pick-your-own-car service. It's been great, actually. Since they started this, I've yet to climb into a car that's got more than 1,000 miles. So dropping my car off at Atlanta last week, I do my usual thing. I fill the car up. I fill the tank just outside the airport. I drop it off, walk away without waiting for the Hertz guy to check me in because it's usually too long of a wait during the afternoon drop-off rush hour. They just don't have enough guys. And they'll email me the receipt anyhow. So actually, them giving me a paper receipt is actually a hassle because they'll email me a receipt, which I can then electronically attach to my expense report. So it all typically usually works out. I usually, take the gas receipt. I put it on the dashboard underneath the keys. So, they know I haven't pocketed the keys. Boom, there's the gas receipt. Everything's good. But I didn't do that this time because the gas station I ended up stopping at near Atlanta was just a bit dodgy. And I think the signs that were posted on the gas pump that said, keep your car locked while filling up, that kind of spooked me a little bit. So I decided not to wait for the pump to spit out a gas receipt. I just put the lid on and off I drove. So the email receipt from Hertz shows up on my phone kind of just after I boarded the plane at Atlanta. So just after I'd sat down, boom, there it is. I open it up. It's a PDF. I scan the numbers. I kind of look at the lines, look at the numbers. And God, I mean, bless it. You know, there was a refueling charge. And so now I flip over to my Amex app, and the gas charge hadn't yet posted to the Amex card, so I couldn't grab that receipt. You know, it just kind of pissed me off. The gas gauge was clearly sort of unambiguously pegged on F, on full. So, you know, the check-in guy must have just been pencil whipping the check-in. And that's what really annoyed me. So sitting here, waiting for the rest of the flight to board, I had a little bit of time to stew and to tweet out my annoyance to @Hertz, complete with a mad face emoji. So my flight takes off and I feel a little bit better because at least I vented. I land at O'Hare, take my phone out of airplane mode, and bing, there's a reply from Hertz on Twitter. Please, you know, DM, please direct message us your rental agreement number. I flip over to the emailed receipt, copy paste the rental agreement number into Twitter, into direct message, boom, send it off. And so while we're still on the plane, now we're doing the usual O'Hare thing of taxiing all over the airport, I guess looking for a gate. I actually, in that time, I get a message back saying, Mark, apologies for the trouble with the fueling fee. After further review, I will be refunding this charge to the account billed. We appreciate you bringing this to our attention so that we may look into this with our local Atlanta team. Wow. Now I've gone from pissed to impressed at how fast they got this thing fixed. Now, I'm sure that some of this has to do with my status at Hertz, but still, it just goes to show another proof point that Twitter can be a very effective line cut into customer service. So the second topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is London Tube Stories. A few weeks ago on one of my Saturday bike rides, I was listening to Craig and Linda Martin's Indie Travel podcast episode about using public transit. It kind of got me thinking about my recent sort of public transit experiences. We've talked about this in past episodes, and I've nerded out on it a little bit, especially around the kind of the concept of taking public transit, say, between a city and the airport. Now, during our week in London at the end of June, we used the tube a whole lot. Underground, though, it was still surprisingly warm and stuffy from, you know, the prior week's temperatures. They had to hit like a 40-year high temperature the week before we arrived. It was very hot by British standards, sort of in the 30s Celsius, kind of the upper 80s, low 90s Fahrenheit. Yeah, not too hot if you say you live in Memphis or Dubai, but you know, if you're in a country that doesn't have widespread air conditioning, that's still hot. We were staying in the Fitzrovia neighborhood of London, kind of the first time being in that part of London. It's sort of north of Oxford Street. We were just off of Tottenham High Street and kind of near University College London. And the area is well served. It's got a number of tube stops, number of tube lines kind of ringing it. And actually, we'd chosen that neighborhood, A, because we hadn't been there before, but B, because it was going to have easy tube access to Wembley Stadium for the Adele concert. So that Wednesday, we headed out early for the concert because we were planning to get there a couple hours before showtime because we expected security to be tight, given what had happened a few months prior in London at Borough Market and on London Bridge and all the other things going on in Europe. We just expected it was going to be tight. And we were right. But give yourself some time, no worries. We got on the train there. I forget which stop we got on in Fitzrovia, but we got on the train. It was kind of an interesting mix then of commuters winding down from their day and concert goers getting ramped up for theirs. I mean, the seated people sitting down, heads down in their papers, standing groups of people sort of chatting away, maybe, slipping a sip of a canned gin and tonic, maybe singing a little, snippet of a tune, something, humming things along. It was kind of an interesting blend. And kind of, if you think about it, though, the trip to the concert wasn't going to be that bad. Shouldn't be that bad. You got people spread out between, two, maybe 3 hours worth of trains. The end of the concert, though, 96,000 people leaving Wembley at once, and a huge sea of them were heading toward the Wembley Stadium tube stop. Now, luckily, the rain that had been forecasted earlier in the week for that night had hit London actually earlier in the day, and so the evening was dry. Because if not, that 30 to 45 minutes that we spent sort of shoulder to shoulder, penguin walking the third to half mile that was between our seats and the tube stop, and doing that with, I don't know, tens of thousands of what became our close personal friends, that if it had been raining, that would have been absolutely miserable. But as it was, it was nice out. Everyone was in good spirits. It had been a great concert. Everybody was polite and courteous. There was no shoving, not a lot of trying to sort of snake up between people to the front of lines. The police, the security guys would hold up signs at an intersection. One side would say, "Stop." And then the other side was green with go. And when they spun it around to the red stop, the crowd would stop like magic. No one would try and slip around the edges or try and make a last dash. One cop was actually playing songs through his bullhorn for the crowd while they waited for the signs to be spun back around to go. I mean, it was so crowded. So much could have easily gone wrong, but it didn't. And once we actually got on the tube, and again, even the tube station was sort of shoulder to shoulder, but everybody was moving along. We got back to Fitzrovia in time for a nightcap. But I don't know, I guess I shouldn't be so surprised. I mean, doesn't that experience just sort of validate the English stereotype? People that queue well, they suffer through without complaining, the whole kind of keep calm and carry on ethos, and eventually get to the other side in time for a pint at the pub. I guess that's England. And, maybe that's what I really like about taking public transit. In past episodes, I've talked about public transit as a way of popping the travel bubble, using it to get a real feeling for where you are. I mean, the whole mind the gap thing in the tube is just another English thing, as is the small taped off spaces where buskers can perform and sort of the connecting passageways between the tube lines. I mean, compare that to what I talked about a couple episodes ago, a very less structured Paris metro experience where we had tuba buskers that walked onto the trains, rapping buskers that walked onto the trains, complete with powered speakers on a luggage cart. And then there was this whole three-person opera reenactment that took over the whole shop area of a metro stop. Nothing about staying in the little taped off section. The way that people bringing their bikes onto a Portland, Oregon light rail car just sort of solidifies and validates the whole Portlandia image. Or, picking up the Chicago L in the loop after the exchanges close, when those last knuckle draggers who are actually working open outcry in the option pits, they're all kind of, in their trader jackets, trade tickets still kind of sticking out of the pocket, and they're heading up to Wrigley for an afternoon Cubs game. There is just something about public transit that is a real cool way to experience a city. Okay, that's it. That's the end of Travel Commons Podcast number 131. I hope you all enjoyed the show. I hope you decide to stay subscribed. And better yet, tell somebody about it. Check out the show notes for music links for the bridge music. As always, you can find us on SoundCloud, Stitcher, iTunes. If you have a thought, story, comment, gripe, the voice of the traveler, send them along. Text your audio file to comments, COMMENTS at travelcommons.com. Hit me on Twitter at mpeacock. I'm not sure that I'll be able to help you from a customer service standpoint, but I'll reply to you. write your comments on the Travel Commons page on Facebook, or post them on the website at travelcommons.com. Thanks to everyone who has taken the time to send in emails, tweets, post comments on the website, put something on Facebook. I really appreciate it. Until we talk again, Safe travels, and thanks for stopping by the Travel Commons. Bye now.